Appeals is now in session. Judge Cochran, Judge Frisch, Judge Riley, the Honorable Gene M. Cochran presiding.
Good morning. You may be seated. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Let's take a minute to get situated here. So today we have four cases on our calendar, three oral cases and one non-oral case. As you know, we make an audio recording of our oral arguments. So for purposes of the recording, I'll note that today is July 17th, 2024. I'm Judge Cochran, and with me today are Judge Frisch and Judge Riley. The first case on our calendar today is A24-0495, Charlene Junt versus Marcus Junt. Counsel will each have 15 minutes for your primary argument, and as you know, appellant, you'll have 5 additional minutes for rebuttal. When you start your argument, it would help us if you can introduce yourself and the party you represent. And so with that, you may proceed when you're ready.
Thank you. Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Philip Gainsley. I am the attorney for Marcus Junt, the appellant in this matter. I'd like to start by reiterating that this appeal is not about service of process. That issue has been decided by this court. It's the law of the case. That's not why we're here this morning. The only issue before the court is whether respondent erroneously attempted to renew her judgment by a civil action rather than to comply with the child support judgment renewal statute, thereby depriving this court of jurisdiction, subject matter jurisdiction. The district court did not address this issue, but importantly, the district court did cite statutes 54104 and 55001. The former limits the judgment duration to 10 years, but the latter provides, quote, a creditor may proceed to enter judgment at any time within 10 years in the manner provided by law. So please note the auxiliary verb may and the phrase in the manner provided by law. It's what brings us here this morning. The district court discussed the simple method to renew judgments, but in doing so, she relies solely on civil actions, not on child support renewal judgments. The simple method Judge Conroy referred to was the commencement of a civil action, but that's not this case. Nowhere in the district court's order did she refer to a child support judgment, and nowhere did the court refer to 548.091. Moreover, the district court erroneously granted summary judgment, quote, as defendant has failed to present specific non-speculative facts sufficient to demonstrate a genuine issue of facts for trial.
Counsel, I understand this case to be one of statutory interpretation of 548.091, sub 3B. And when I look at the language there, I don't see any language that provides that child support judgments are that this is the exclusive manner of renewal of a judgment. And it feels to me that the argument that you're making in this appeal is adding language to the statute. Why am I wrong?
You are wrong, Your Honor, with all due respect.
And why? That was my question. Why am I wrong?
You would have the court define may as providing an alternative to what the statutory procedure is, the manner provided by law. If you take a look at the 7 uses of the word may in the statute, they all are permissive. They all permit a party to take some action. It doesn't say in that this is an alternative. In fact, Your Honor, it is respondent who is adding language that should not be added.
So let's get back to my question, and let me phrase it a little differently. What is the plain and unambiguous language in subdivision 3B that provides that this is the exclusive manner of renewal of child support judgment? Or a child support judgment must be renewed in the manner provided in this statute. Where's that language?
Because you have to take May in the context of the entire statute. And the entire statute, the child support renewal statute, indeed the child support entry of judgment statute, uses the word may, not as an alternative, not as something that is permissive other than the sense that it's the manner provided by law.
That, though, I mean, may could also be read to be that it's an option to renew it that way.
But it is not.
But otherwise, how do you know that? That's what I'm trying to understand.
Then the statute would have said, alternatively, a party, an obligee, can make the motion.
How many statutes do you know that say alternatively when it's not exclusive?
Well, I didn't research.
I just can't think of a statute that says alternatively.
But what you need to understand, the point I'm trying to make, is that the use of the word may throughout means, as the dictionary definition says, in dozens of cases, courts have held may to be synonymous with the word shall or must, with an effort to effectuate what is said in the legislative intent.
However, in this statute in subdivision 2, the legislature did use the word shall. Subdivision 2 says the court administrator shall enter.
I was going to get to that. That proves my point. The party may, the court administrator shall, once the party acts, the word may permits a party to take certain action. And once the party takes that action, then the court administrator shall. You've really made my point, Judge Cochran, in the difference between shall and may. There is nothing in the statute, if you read the statutes, well, Judge Frisch, you just decided an opinion, Jane Doe 271, it came out on Monday, where you reaffirmed the principle, a statute should be interpreted as a whole so as to harmonize and give effect to all its parts. That's why I keep saying to you the word may throughout the statute means the same thing. Not may as an option, not may as an alternative.
Well, when counsel, so respondents argue that may is used as an alternative to the traditional common law approach of renewing a judgment. Why is that interpretation not reasonable?
Well, let's compare it, for example, Your Honor, to the rule of this court that says a party may take an appeal by doing X, Y, Z. It's the same thing. That's the use of the word may, if it gives permission. If a party chooses to take an appeal, this is the way it's done. It doesn't say the party shall, it says the parties may.
Can I just clarify, counsel? Your argument seems to me that the statute is ambiguous. It's susceptible to more than one.
I don't think so.
You think it's an unambiguous statute?
Yes.
The word may is unambiguous.
Yes.
It could not reasonably be interpreted to be permissive. It should be interpreted, it can only be interpreted to be mandatory.
Yes.
And is there a Minnesota authority that provides that we interpret the word may to be mandatory as opposed to permissive?
Well, again, I have to go back to the usage of the word throughout the entire statute. No, I can't think of that. I do know that the statute is given its own provision, child support judgment administrative renewals. That's the name of the statute. I've quoted in my brief, I think, seven different uses of the word may. They have to be taken in harmony, not with at one point saying it's an option to something else or it's an alternative, and the other saying it's mandatory. When the child support statute, renewal statute says a party may renew, if it said shall, that would require a party to do it. It's up to the party to decide whether the party wishes to do so. So may grants that party permission. It doesn't say as an alternative something else. It grants the, now, I.
But it wouldn't, if the intent was to abrogate the common law approach, wouldn't we need a clear indication that the legislature intended to do that?
No. And the reason for it is that the statute actually eliminates the common law. I refer to that in my brief by saying, for example, the statute previously said that a child support judgment may be renewed for 10 years, but only twice. The statute was amended to say a child support renewal can be renewed any number of times as long as it's done, quote, in the manner provided.
Do you think we should publish this case? And if
yes,
so, what would the syllabus point be?
Yes, I do. And maybe I should have said that in my brief. I had a tough time thinking about that because there is no case that decides this case. I researched this, obviously, seriously, and many times, right up till today. There is no case that provides this either way. And I was hoping you wouldn't ask the question because I don't want the next question to be, well, aren't we an error-correcting court and we don't make law, doesn't the Supreme Court make law? And we just can't continue this process all the way to the Supreme Court, especially when it's as clear as it is here. And it is clear that from the very beginning, from the use of the word may, it doesn't present an alternative. It grants the party a permission to renew the judgment. That's what it does. I'm not sure this abrogates common law, by the way. The statute simply says this is the way to do it. If you're going to do it, you do it this way. I was going to talk about the use of the word shall, but Judge Cochran, you beat me to it. There's a difference between when the statute says the court administrator shall enter and docket. That's what the court administrator does. That's not what a party does. The party is granted permission to do what he or she seeks to do. You know, if respondent had followed the statute, the earlier proceedings in this matter could have been avoided. All she would have had to do was to drop in the mail the notice that the statute provides.
Well, it was kind of hard to know where to mail the notice.
At the address that she used when she docketed the judgment. You have to do an affidavit of identification. And she knew an address there. And what's interesting about that is the rule doesn't give, for example, Mr. Junt, the option of contesting that. The only thing that the rule permits Mr. Junt to do would be to challenge the amount.
It seems like he would have challenged the, quote, last known address of the debtor.
He doesn't have that authority. So the rule doesn't give him that right. It doesn't. And if he were to make that motion, you know that they would have opposed it by saying, that's not a part of the rule. He's not entitled to that. I mean, if the statute, as a matter of fact, if the legislature had wanted to give him that right, it could have said so when it said that he has the right to object to the amount owing. The statute could have read the amount, to challenge the amount owing and the service of process. The statute didn't say that. Something else I want to address if I may here. Child support judgments may be renewed by service of notice of debtor. Now, that doesn't provide an option. That doesn't provide an option. Either we do it by the way the statute prescribes or not. But there's no option. There's no available option. There's no alternative. So what the statute says, and this is important because respondent says, well, okay, we didn't comply with the statute, but we went beyond that by serving, by commencing a civil action. You can't get by with that. It says, in the manner provided for service, in the manner provided by law. They didn't proceed in the manner provided by law. Now, you might say, well, but they commenced the civil action. That doesn't do it. The statute says it's the means. They have the right to do it by mail with service deemed complete upon mailing in the manner designated or in the manner provided for service of civil process. The manner provided for service of civil process does not mean the commencement of a civil action with all that that entails. It means simply the way or the means by which service of process is made. That's what Black's Law Dictionary tells us is the definition of the word manner. So they can't avoid the statute by saying we went beyond what the statute says. You either do it by statute or you don't, in the manner provided. That's why I emphasized that when I started speaking. I should also add, just last May, this court decided the published case of Reed versus Westgate Investments. It's in my brief, stating that where there are...
If you can sum up quickly, your time is up. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
There are two motions that were made. Their motion for summary judgment, the court should have granted me summary, my client summary judgment, Mr. Johnson, because there is no issue of fact. It's a question of law. And secondly, the court should have granted our motion to dismiss the matter for lack of subject matter jurisdiction. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please
there
the court.
Is a button which you can use to raise and lower the podium if you like.
I can see you even better with it down.
Okay, great.
Good morning. My name is Benjamin Court. With me at council table is my colleague, Sarah Almquist. We are here today on behalf of the respondent, Charlene Junt. I'm very excited to talk about the word may today, but before I get there, there are two issues that I would like to tackle first, subject to your questions. The first is waiver. There is no question that the fact that this was a child support judgment was in the record from the very beginning of this case. Opposing counsel argues that he didn't know until we were before this court last summer. That is false. That information was in the record from the very beginning because we put that order that identified that issue in the record. This was known from the beginning. It was certainly known by the Court of Appeals at the last appeal we had last summer. And nevertheless, this issue did not come up, frankly, which is my second issue, because it's not a subject matter jurisdiction issue. But nevertheless, this issue could have and should have been addressed by appellant and certainly could have been addressed sua sponte if it were a subject matter jurisdiction issue, which it's not. It could have been addressed by the court last summer. It was not. Instead, the court held that service was proper. And that's why we argue this is a case about service, because the appellant...
You would agree, though, that the prior decision of this court did not address subject matter jurisdiction.
It did not. But that issue could have been raised. It was not raised. Issues that were not raised are waived as a matter of law. It could also have been raised sua sponte.
Subject matter, I think our case law instructs that subject matter jurisdiction can be raised at any time.
Sure, but it can also be waived by not addressing it in the first appeal. We shouldn't, frankly, be here today. So that's issue number one. Issue number two is this is not a subject matter jurisdiction issue. Minnesota Statute 548.091 Subdivision 4 clearly provides the district court with jurisdiction to, an appellant even brought the issue up when the issue about the address came up, which, by the way, is a red herring, because whatever the appellant's address was in 2012, when that judgment was docketed the first time, certainly was not the last known address. This case has been going on for way too long, and it has been, everything in this case has been contested. So that's irrelevant. But more important, this is not a subject matter jurisdiction issue, because that statute, 548.091 Subdivision 4, clearly provides the district court and the district court administrator with authority to hear these types of matters. If there is a dispute about the amount, that who hears that? The district court hears that. So clearly the district court, as a matter of law, pursuant to the plain language of the statute, has subject matter jurisdiction to hear this. So this is not a deprivation of the district court being able to hear this. It's just not an issue. This is a personal jurisdiction issue, and frankly, it is a service issue. He's claiming we should have served it a different way. That is effectively his argument. We did serve it in the manner prescribed by law, because there is nothing in any statute that prohibits a party from renewing a judgment by filing a new civil complaint and personally serving that on someone. And as a practical matter,
counsel, to be fair, I think that your esteemed colleague's argument is that the statute provides for the exclusive jurisdiction of the district court by the mechanism set forth in the child support renewal judgment renewal statute, and that the word may means must, and that's an unambiguous interpretation of the statute. So why don't, let's talk about
that.
Let's get to that. Thanks.
So what is conspicuously and glaringly missing in the analysis that has been presented by the appellant here is 150 years of common law. And that's where, in my view, this starts and stops. His argument is that the statute gave a party the right to do this, but only if you do it in this particular way. The problem is since the late 1870s, I believe, or 1880s, common law has provided for a right to renew a judgment. And so the statute can't give someone a permissive right that that party already has. That makes no sense. That would completely abrogate 150 years of common law. And also, there is nothing in the statute as it exists in its plain language that indicates that common law was to be turned over or abrogated in any way. So as a practical matter, may can't mean you have a right to do this, because you've already had that right, and you've had that right for a long time. What may has to mean in the context of the statute, and that's one thing I think opposing counsel and I do agree on, is that statutes have to be read as a whole, and they have to be read in the context that they are within.
Is it your position the statute is unambiguous?
I do not believe the statute is ambiguous in any way.
Okay. Is there any authority in Minnesota that interprets the word may in a statute to be as must or shall? I was unable to find it. I'm asking you if you found it.
If there is, I would be both surprised and shocked. In fact, everything that I have ever seen in my practice has been the exact opposite. There are plenty, and I think we cite a couple of cases in our brief, but there's plenty of authority under existing Minnesota law that says shall is, or your must is shall, and may is permissive. So I don't think this is a difficult decision if the court wants to even address the merits. As I indicated earlier, I don't think we have to go there based on the waiver and the subject matter jurisdiction issue, because it's not subject matter jurisdiction. But if we get to the merits, I think this lives and dies on the fact that may is permissive, and this is not a shall in this statute.
I'll ask you the same question I asked Mr. Gainsley. Do you think this case should be precedential, and if so, what would the syllabus point be?
I'm going to give you a very lawyerly answer. It depends.
Helpful.
Yes. Well, and I'll explain. I think it depends. If the court addresses this on a waiver issue or on a lack of subject matter jurisdiction argument issue, I don't think there's any reason to. I frankly don't think there is necessarily a reason to publish it, even if it's not. This is a pretty simple case of statutory interpretation, in my view, notwithstanding the word salad that we have heard from appellant in this matter. I think this is pretty straightforward. But if the court were to publish it, I think that's fine. I don't think that's necessary. I think there are plenty of cases already out there on judgment renewals, including but not limited to the Shamrock Development case, which actually undermines, as does the as do many other cases, but the Shamrock case from 2007 of this court came out 2 years after this statute was amended, as appellant noted in his presentation. And in that case, this court decided that the procedure for renewing a judgment is not specifically prescribed by statute. So that decision came out after the statute was amended. So that, I think, the existing law on this issue is pretty clear.
That case didn't involve child support, though, correct?
It did not, but it did involve judgment renewals.
Can you point us to any case involving child support where the common law method of renewal was used?
I can't think of one off the top of my head, but that doesn't mean there aren't plenty of cases where that has occurred. I can't think of one that has made it to the appellate level, and I think that's probably telling because it's pretty obvious that it is an alternative means, that the statutory language was set up to be an alternative means, so there wouldn't be a need for anyone to bring that to the appellate level.
Excuse me, I didn't hear the court's question.
I asked if counsel could point us to any case where the common law method was used to renew a judgment involving child support.
There is a case, the Dahlin v. Cronin case, which is cited by both parties in their briefs, which in dicta addresses child support judgments. And that is a case from the Minnesota Supreme Court in 2011. And that case actually supports, notwithstanding appellant's arguments, that case actually supports our position, because in that case, they relied on the common law. And they indicated the process was the statute, the child support judgment renewal statute, was enacted.
And that was a spousal maintenance case?
I believe that was. But they specifically referenced 548.091 in child support judgments in the context of trying to make it easier for parties to renew child support judgments. And frankly, if that is the legislative intent, we did that here. Opposing counsel characterizes it as going above and beyond, but we complied with the law, and that is what is required. And the Dahling v. Cronin case supports our position on that. I go back to this, but accepting appellant's interpretation of the word may would abrogate 150 years of common law, and that is just not something that, one, makes any sense, particularly in a case here where we've got unpaid child support judgments and the legislature and the courts have determined they want to make that process easier. We would have liked to have followed an easier process here. Unfortunately, the disposition of the underlying case has made everything extremely difficult. And we didn't have a last known address. And in fact, the address was being actively concealed, and the record reflects that. So if we want to talk about legislative intent, I think we still have that on our side, because that is ultimately, we would like child support judgments to get paid. And to the statutory language that was also cited by appellant about renewing judgments multiple times, there's now case law in Minnesota that indicates that any judgment can be renewed multiple times. So again, we look to the common law, because that decision was a common law decision. That was not a statutory decision. That's where we start and stop. The statute should be interpreted in a way that complements 150 years of precedent. And the only interpretation that follows that is that may provides for what it plainly says, an alternative means to do this. The statute clearly and absolutely could have said child support judgments shall be renewed in this manner. That's easy. That is something the legislature could have simply done. They did not. That is telling in and of itself. So at the end of the day, the legislature could have definitely mandated a singular procedure for doing this. It didn't. If you also look to 548.09, which is the statute immediately preceding 548.091, it also says child support judgments may be renewed in the manner set forth in 548.091. It doesn't say they shall be renewed that way. So there are multiple statutes here that are consistent, in our view, with what the common law says, and we followed the law.
Counsel, can you remind me, what is the current amount of the child support arrears?
That is a great question, because interest accrues at a significant rate. There was a partial satisfaction that came from a garnishment. I would say, is still over with interest. I would estimate that is still well over $100,000, but that is only one of six judgments that respondent has against appellant. And we were talking about this in the car on the way over. By my, I don't want to say back of the napkin.
Feel any privilege information?
Yeah, I was talking with my colleague. This is not a privileged conversation. I was going to say back of the napkin, but I was driving, so maybe back of the mind. I believe the outstanding amount of the judgments against him at this point exceed more than $5 million.
All right, thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
But Riley, I didn't answer your question about what the syllabus would be if this were a published case, and I'd like to do that in my time awaiting. Grammar is important here, and I want it to be right. I would say the syllabus would read something like, Minnesota Statutes 548.091 is the exclusive manner provided by law to renew a child support judgment. That's what the syllabus, I think, should say.
Counsel, we're dealing with a child support judgment here, which is, I think, a different kind of debt. Yeah. And we're talking about, in this particular case, child support arrears in the six figures at least. And I, when I read the child support statutes and cases like Dahlin and other cases from our court and the Minnesota Supreme Court, it appears that we take a dim view of failure to pay child support. And I cannot square your interpretation of this statute as limiting the manner in which child support judgments can be renewed with Minnesota well-established public policy and law and common law and the statutory language to restrict the manner in which child support is collected. Why is the interpretation that you are espousing today consistent with all of that authority?
I hesitate to say it. Sometimes you have to, we're here as a matter of law. The statute says, except 548.091, except as provided in section 548.091, every judgment requiring child support, .. The last sentence then says, child support judgments may be renewed pursuant to 548.091. The statute starts with, except for the provisions of 091, and concludes with, child support judgments may be renewed pursuant to 091. Now, if you take a look at 091, as counsel did a moment ago, subdivision 4, a child support obligor obligor, may request a hearing under rules of civil procedure on the issue of whether a judgment amount or amounts have been paid. That's the sole and exclusive right of the obligor to request a hearing, only about the amount, not about service of process. I also wish to remind the court, and I think the court said it for me, but just to reiterate on the record here, subject matter jurisdiction cannot be waived and can be raised at any time, including on appeal, as a matter of fact. And I think we put that to rest. I think I'm finished unless the court has any further questions.
I do not. Thank you.
It appears there are no further questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
For your argument. Thank you. Thank you to counsel for your arguments here today. They're very helpful. The matter is submitted, and we will issue our opinion within the statutory time frame.